Hi, I'm Kylie.
And I'm Elliot.
We're hosts of Bad Dad, Rad Dad, a Snack Labs podcast where we look for better dads one movie at a time. Every week, we talk about the movies we watched, the thoughts and feelings they brought up in us, and the best and worst dads we found in them.
Our weekly movie picks can span decades, genres, languages, and more. Plus, we keep it totally spoiler-free so you can discover movies that you want to watch.
So join us every Thursday on our silly little movie journey to hear about the movies we watched that week.
And the dads they made us wish we had. Because
my dad's dead.
And my dad's a deadbeat.
But as far as we're concerned,
not all dads have to be bad.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, baby.
Hello, my love.
It's Termion time.
That's with Jeremy and Brady.
Yeah. That's the, so because last week you were, I said ready to talk about sex, and you said you hate that. So this is our new this is how we enter the this is our new entry to the show now.
Let's try several different things.
Okay.
Like next week we'll try something different.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. All right. Cool. Great. Great. great to be here, everyone. Thank you so much for that raucous applause. look at you all. You all look great. Thanks for coming out. Babe, can I fucking say something right now? I don't know if I should put this in the show.
There's a guy outside the house.
Yeah, man. There's this guy outside the house. I have to take anti-defamation training for Sick Boy, and I don't even know what that means, to be honest with you. I think it's like...
You're not allowed to teach you how to not slander other people?
I guess so, yeah.
Do you have a slandering problem?
I don't think, but I can't really talk about it yet, but there's like big, big news in the Sick Boy world, and we made a new friend, and so the show is going to be like it's a network thing, and so awesome, it's awesome. We're fucking super stoked, and but we haven't announced it yet. But as a part of it, it's making things very official. You know, it's like this podcast we started in a fucking basement, in Brian's mom's basement, is now like, oh, this is now like a part of an institution kind of thing. Anyway, we got to take anti-defamation training. And I'm like, now every time I go to talk about anything, which we haven't done it yet, so I don't even know what that fucking means. But now I go to say something, and I'm like, oh, God, can I not say this? But anyway, all that to say, there's this guy across the street, this guy that lives across the street. I'm whispering because he's right outside the fucking house right here. I'm pretty sure, babe, I don't know, but I'm pretty sure this guy across the street, who shall not be named, and I will not say anything that gives anyone any sense of what this person looks like, so they can't defamation sue me. I think he might be a peeping Tom.
Really?
And I think I'm his victim.
Okay.
Dude,
this seems less plausible by the second. But.
No. Hold on. I'm not joking. He loves, so his balcony overlooks the, like, looks... I can see his balcony right now. Like, I'm sitting right. Like, we have this big window in the front of the house, and he sits on the balcony. And if he just sits on the balcony, he just looks in here at me. And I'll see him staring at me, and I'll just, like, posture up and fucking look back at him. And he doesn't look away. And it's really weird. And so,
he's probably looking at his own reflection.
No, man. Most people look No. Okay. All right. Let me give you this quick example then. I had a lady friend.
Do you wave back?
Yeah. I had a lady friend over, and they came to the house, and kind of was like excited to see me. We didn't waste any time and started sucking face. And I think like both of our shirts came off in the process, and it was like evening, but like evening now that, you know, these days, like the sun doesn't fucking go down for forever. So it was like, it was probably 9 o'clock, but still light out. And yeah. I guess the front door like I didn't close the front door of the house.
Did he come over and close the door?
No, dude. So then I look up and I'm on the couch and from my vantage point on the couch, I can like see out the front door of the house, like a sliver, just a little bit, but enough to see out and enough for someone to see in. And I, in the midst of like this little makeout sesh, topless, I look over my friend's shoulder here, and I see outside, and he's fucking standing. And where he's standing, listen to this, Bride, where he's standing, if I look out that door in that direction, he's nowhere near his balcony. He's out on the curb, like up the street, maybe 50 feet to get a vantage point in. And he's just standing there looking. And so I start laughing. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And I stand up and I go over to the door to close it. And I think I'm just wearing underwear at this point. And I'm laughing and I just wave at him and he waves back and I shut the door and I went, oh my God, allegedly, he's a peeping Tom.
When I was in San Francisco.
Yeah, chew those chips into the mic. How about that? Jesus Christ.
Man, you know what I learned? So I have Bigby now for the next couple of weeks. You brought me Bigby this weekend. And
I did. We can talk about that. Yeah.
And I forgot that the sounds that come out of his face while he's eating.
Oh, my God, dude. Everything. While he's eating, while he's licking his nuts, while he's fucking just breathing. It's everything.
I felt so bad I had to kick him out of the bedroom last night because he was breathing, panting so heavy. It's so hot in the bedroom, right? But
yeah, no,
I had to walk him to the basement where it was cooler.
Yeah, no, he'll do that. He will pant like that every night if you have him.
He's a cacophony
upstairs.
Of sounds.
He sure is.
But all happening at one time.
You know what? When he's dead, babe, and he's taxidermied, and we have him in the living room here, where I have him. Well, where I'll have him posted up with a cigar coming out of his mouth and a nice, like, cool, like newsy hat on. We'll miss the sounds. We'll get the visual, but we'll miss the sounds. Well, so I might get a sound. I might get a sound box and install it into them.
I think it's a good idea. That's what I was going to say. Just like a little battery operated. Just like insert it.
And a sense, a movement sensor. So every time you walk by it, it just goes like.
Or every time your fork hits your teeth, you just hear sounds of him chewing and trying to digest his own food.
Yeah.
And it's just a reminder that we're all loud eaters.
That he's our boy. Babe, I saw you this week.
Oh, for the first time since March.
Holy fuck. I drove my ass all the way over to PEI.
3.5 hours.
And,
probably three at your speed.
Yeah, it was three. And, dude, they are not checking people they're checking people when they get to PEI. I'll tell you that much, but the Nova Scotia and New Brunswick border, they're just like, giddy on up, like, come on through, folks. Like, no
stops.
The fact
that there are people there, though, is like unusual.
Yeah, there's still people there, I guess. Yeah, mm-hmm. But anyway, I came over and I saw you, and I got to see you and Todd and Rose, and Bigby was there, and he was so happy. He was so happy that I left him, which is fucked because I got really sad on the drive home. But he's only there for a couple of weeks, and I'm coming back and I'm getting him.
Yeah, so. He is such an old man. I think he might be losing his hearing. Like, when I call to him and he's far away and there's no acknowledgement, for a minute I was like, what a fucking jerk. But might, now yeah, I'm just not. He might not be able to hear.
He might not. He's getting old there. He's getting old. Like, this is crazy, folks. If you've been listening for a while, if you're one of those like OG fucking hardcore TMO fans, and I know you're out
there.
We
love you.
I mean, basically, it's pretty much every one of you listens because our download numbers are very consistent every week.
It's
like,
you know,
our numbers aren't huge and they don't grow. They just stay exact. It's like we might get like one new listener a year, but like everyone else is just like, I've been here from the start and I haven't left.
Can't wait to hear how they decide they're going to reintro the show.
Yeah,
this is a big development.
Well, what I was going to say is you've bared witness to when Bridie's dad died. You've bared witness to, I think, a breakup.
A divorce.
A divorce of my folks. And now you're going to bear witness to Bigby's death this year, probably. I hope it's this year. I really do hope it's 2020.
I do.
I just
so you can really write the year
just
off.
Just get it fucking over with, man. Get it all out this year. That's all I'm saying. It's like, Bigby, if you're going, you're going in 2020 or else you don't get to go.
Wow. Okay. Well, should I just stop giving him his seizure medication and just speed it right along?
No, don't do that.
Sri Lanka is calling me. Who do you think is calling me in Sri Lanka?
I bet you it's probably important.
Yeah.
It was nice to see you, babe. And you taught me a new game. You taught me to play sevens in dominoes.
Which you invented a title for. It has no name.
I think it's called sevens. I mean, every round you pick seven dominoes, so it's called sevens.
Ladies, am I right that whenever you teach a man something, he needs to put his own stamp on it and call it his own? Am I right?
You know what that's called? That's called mansplaining.
Yeah.
Speaking of mansplaining, let me mansplain something to you. Have you ever looked at the Wikipedia for mansplaining?
No, please.
It is so good.
Is there a picture of someone that we know there? Because that would be to die for.
You know what? I was just going to say something, and I'm not allowed to say it, but I'll tell you off mic of who that would have been. Mansplaining. This fucking cracks me up. Listen to this. This is also, the page is so long. Of course. It's just, you're being mansplained what mansplaining is.
Okay.
Mansplaining, Wikipedia. A blend word of man and the informal form splaining of the gerund explaining. It is a pejorative term meaning of a man to comment on or explain something to a woman in a condescending, overconfident, and over inaccurate, inaccurate or oversimplified manner.
Oh my God, my life.
Author Rebecca Solnit ascribed the phenomenon to a combination of overconfidence and cluelessness. Lily Rothman of The Atlantic defined it as explaining without regard to the fact that the explainee knows more than the explainer, often done by a man to a woman. Fuck.
Oh my God.
So funny. New York Times listed it as one of its words of the year. Man, I wonder if Karen's going to be word of the year this year.
100%. Is there Karens. A male version of Karen?
Yeah, Kevin.
Oh, is that a thing, or did you just...
No. Well, I mean, that's what's being used on the socials.
Mm, yeah. Okay.
If you go to... There's a
most creative new word in 2012, mansplaining. 2012.
Oh, yeah. 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 Most creative word, yeah. In 2010, it was named by New York Times as its word of the year.
This is cool. The verb splain... has been in use for more than 200 years, originally as a colloquial pronunciation of the late Middle English word explain.
Explain it to me.
It came increasingly to refer to condescending or verbose explanations.
The boys, Brian and Taylor, described me as verbose the other day. And when they first did, I was like, oh, thank you. And then I looked up the description of verbose and I was like, oh.
Can we have a new segment of the show where we talk about words that turn us on? Because I love words so much.
Yeah, okay.
Words that turn you on. Yeah. Like here's a synonym for verbose. Loquacious.
Ah, ooh. Loquacious. Wait, but loquacious, Is that, that sounds nice. Can I, am I loquacious? Do I want to be loquacious?
Tending to talk a great deal.
I sure am loquacious. God damn it.
Yeah, I mean, you know what?
Own hey, man, it. That's not the worst. That's not the worst.
You know what I love about you is you're verbose, but you also, you have an, and I don't know if a lot of people get to see this about you, but it's something I really appreciate, is while verbose, you have such a great capacity to change your mind within a conversation with someone. So I think changing someone's mind as an objective is a very difficult, almost impossible thing to do. Science would say, psychology would say, it's very hard to change someone's mind unless they want their mind to be changed.
Right.
And although not only verbose, but also like you have some, you can come in hot with like, this is how it is, but you are also...
Are you saying more, I change other people's minds my verboseness, saying, or my mind changes?
I'm saying that you have a capacity to come in strong with some opinions, but somehow stay open and acknowledge other people's opinions and points to be valuable and true and worth considering and... Right. And allowing your mind to be changed within conversation, which is like a skill when we say verbose or mansplaining, we might think of someone who's just like fucking unreachable because they're so on their own high horse that they can't even like...
Right.
So, just to dispel that negative connotation that comes with verbose, I find that at least you're open and
in the
receptive.
Very least. It's because I gaslight myself. Another word that the guys used was bombastic, and I was like, oh, that's cool, thanks. And then I looked up bombastic. Didn't like that one either.
What's that mean?
Look it up.
But there's a song with that word in it. Do you know what it is?
We're a little bombastic, mighty fantastic. I believe that could be Sean Paul, Mr. Gasol. Actually, maybe that isn't Sean Paul.
Bomb.
No. It's Shaggy. It's Shaggy. Shaggy. He's got that like. No, that's Louis Armstrong trying to do. What are those lyrics though?
Bombastic. I don't know. It's
Shaggy Bombastic. This is the song, Mr. Bombastic. All right, here.
What you want is some bombastic romantic.
Yeah.
Boombastic romantic. Fantastic lover.
God, Shaggy was the shit, man.
Who's Shaggy? I thought that was just another one of
Shaggy
Snoop Dogg's nicknames.
No. Shaggy was like the dude. He had such a voice.
Did he die?
I just haven't heard of him in a long time.
Interesting.
Maybe he did die. I don't know.
You know, when you Google a name and you get this like little profile on the side available on Spotify, YouTube Music. It says Orville Richard Burrell. CDOJ, better known by his stage name Shaggy, is a Jamaican reggae musician, singer, DJ, and actor who scored hits with It Wasn't Me, Boombastic, In the Summertime, Oh Caroline and Angel. But then it says years of service, 1988 to 1981. Does that mean like specifically like military service?
Perhaps. Where is he from?
Jamaican reggae music singer.
I mean, it could be service, but I was wondering if it was like a country where you're looking like in some country. I think in Korea, you have to do a year or two of service.
Interesting. Bastic. Years of service, rank, Lance Corporal, unit, 10th Marine Regiment.
She says,
fought in the Gulf War.
Mr. Boombastic, tell me fantastic. Touch me on the back, she says, on Mr. Roll.
That's going to be our new
karaoke
song. That's one thing that I miss that COVID has taken away.
Karaoke.
We've talked about that before.
Yeah. Hey, another thing that COVID took away? Check this out. This is a really interesting article that that Lauren, co-producer of Sick Boy, sent my way. This is a New York Times article. This comes from Henry Goldblatt. How to shoot a sex scene in a pandemic. Cue the mannequins. Of all the weird ways that COVID-19 has affected life in this country, one of the most bizarre is taking place on a soundstage in Los Angeles. That's where actors on the CBS soap opera, The Bold and the Beautiful, have been shooting intimate scenes with mannequins. Quote, at first we took out the love scenes and the show is falling a little flat because we're all about romance and family interactions, unquote, said Bradley Bell, the executive producer of CBS daytime drama. Quote, one of the first ideas we had was to bring in mannequins for the intimate scenes and hospital scenes, and it's working quite well. We're shooting it from a great distance or in a way you can't see the form is inanimate, unquote. How are the performers reacting to their lifeless co-stars? Quote, we've had a lot of strange looks and questions like, do you really want to do this? Unquote, Bell says. Quote, but everyone is game. They're getting their first latex kiss, unquote. Dude, how interesting is that shit? Fucking mannequins. COVID-19 has been particularly vexing for the writers of TV's sexiest, most romantic series as they try to figure out how to portray physical intimacy. The scenes that draw in viewers...
Not the writer's job.
It kind of is. So I skipped a little ahead there, but they're one of the things that they're doing is they're trying to rewrite shows so that they don't have these scenes as much, right? So this is back from the article. The scenes that draw in viewers and spark Twitter hashtags while keeping their performance... vexing for writers as they try to figure out how to portray physical intimacy while keeping their performance safe. So far, producers of shows like Riverdale, Dynasty, and the L Word, Generation Q, are planning on a combination of safety protocols and narrative tricks. These include aggressive testing of cast and crew, quarantining on-set medical professionals, camera wizardry, illusion and innuendo-laden scripts with subtext reminiscent of the 1970s TV. It was an open secret, for example, that Mary Richards of the Mary Tyler Moore Show was sexually active, even though the series never addressed it. And yes, the occasional mannequin. Isn't that so interesting? Mannequin love scenes.
It's really interesting, and what it's making me think about is like, what will, if there are generations in the future of now, what, you know, who are studying film, let's say, and television, and everything else in the world, like if you're a filmmaker without any knowledge of history, then you might be watching these films from, like, let's say 100 years. You're watching 100 years from now films that are made today.
Yeah.
And they seem very prudish. And they seem like, you know, there's no open displays of affection or sexuality on screen. Will it be like, ah, yes, but at this moment in history when things were happening, you know, this is what was changing. Like, it just shows to me like the importance of studying world events when we're studying art and what it's what we're interpreting it to tell us about the world.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, fuck, it's, we've talked about this a number of times on the show, but like, what you just said there reminded me of Disclosure, you know, that documentary about representation of trans folks in Hollywood and how that plays a direct role in how society views people who are trans what we think of trans people or what our preconceived notions are of trans people. Like, one of the things that stuck out to me the most in that show was, and it never dawned on me, but, and maybe I said this on the show, so if I have, I apologize. Oh Christ, what's the fucking movie? Hello, Clarice.
Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, thanks. Silence of the Lambs. It never dawned on me that Buffalo Bill was like was trans.
They were sort of.
Yeah, they, I mean, or were
were a like, psychopath.
Who skinned
people.
Yes, yes. But like, but that whole scene of him like tucking his dick back and like cross dressing and mm-hmm. and one of the things that was said in the documentary was this trans actress who came out to like a coworker, disclosed to a coworker that like she was trans, and the coworker was like, the response, her reaction was, wait, you mean like Buffalo Bill? And like how fucking crazy is that? Like how crazy is it that someone who had never met a trans person before, the only like thing they could
is this creepy
relate that
evil.
To is a fucking like what you just said, a serial killer that skin it puts the lotion on its skin before it gets burnt, like all that shit. And that was the first thought that came to their head when someone said, I'm trans.
Mm. Like that's like Buffalo Bill.
That's fucking
yeah.
That's great. And that is the power of film and television and art, you know, like
I remember telling you because you and I are movie lovers and we've watched a lot of movies together. And I remember going, and it's the same thing with Todd. It's like when we go through the catalog at Netflix or Crave or Prime or whatever, and we're picking out things, I still notice that I have a proclivity to choose things that have roles for people like me. And I think that I always sort of describe that as like, yeah, I want, like I remember years ago being like, yeah, I want to watch movies that have women in them because I want to like see myself in this movie. And boy, did that ever land when I watched Disclosure too. And I
was oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. Visibility.
Yeah.
Representation.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I mean the moment that I realized how fucking hardcore and important that is when I watched 5 Feet Apart, you know, like that was the first time it was the first time I ever went, oh, this is what it's like to see yourself represented in film. I'm a fucking white, straight white male. Every fucking film I watch is me being represented. But then it was when I saw, you know, that movie.
Cystic fibrosis.
It was like, it was very different. It was like, whoa, I'm not used to this feeling. This is really important.
It's a barrier. And now that I recognize that I'm like, oh, I want to watch myself, I've realized what a barrier that is to like watching other movies that are really great, right? Like the other day, last night, I watched Ad Astra for the first time. And that was like, I like Brad Pitt.
Did you like it?
I liked it. Yeah.
Oh, did you?
I liked it. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I know. I liked it, but it wasn't something that I would have selected because I would have been like, where's the leading woman?
Right.
You know, because I want to watch something that I could do or where I could picture myself in. But now, Todd and I were watching Ad Astra. He fell asleep. Ad Astra was over and I was like, I'm still awake, so I'm going to watch something else. So I put Parasite on and I had no idea that it was subtitled.
Oh,
I
my
had
God.
No idea.
Oh my God.
So I'm 20 minutes in. I'm also like half a bottle of wine in and a joint. And I was just like, after about 20 minutes, I was like, if you had told me, I only know that Parasite is a great movie. That's all I've heard.
Yeah.
But if you had been like, yes, it's subtitled, I would not have clicked on it. So that's now I'm clicking on it. And where is it made?
It's a Korean film. Yeah. I can't handle you freaks that don't like subtitled films. Get the fuck over yourself.
I don't mind subtitled films, but when I'm half a bottle of wine in,
I get it.
Vision is like, you know,
yeah, I get
it's
it.
Nighttime.
You know when I don't like to watch subtitled films is when I'm watching a movie where I want to lay on my side.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only time. Because it's for me, it's really hard to read when I'm on my side.
Yeah.
So wait, hold on. Did you finish it? No.
It was way too late at night.
Yeah,
I was past my bedtime. It was like 10:45.
It's also a long movie.
And I just watched Ad Astra, which is like a 3-hour long movie as well.
Well, fuck, babe, you gotta go back. You gotta finish it and then come back to me, and we'll talk about it.
Say that my Just the Tips probably would be watch a movie that you are not in.
Yeah,
if my you want to like be a little bit like,
yeah,
I want to participate in like just getting outside of your comfort zone.
Totally.
But you don't really want to get outside your comfort zone. Watch a movie that is like that, not for you, maybe.
Yeah. 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 And you know what? And this, I'm going to give this piece of advice based off of this new podcast that I've been listening to, which I fucking love. I think it's maybe one of the best podcasts I've listened to in ever. Okay. The Scaredy Cats Horror Show. So it's the guys from Reply All, PJ Vaught and Alex. What's his fucking name? Alex Goldman. Alex is, so basically how it works is Alex is a huge horror fan, horror film buff, and PJ has never watched a horror, like hates horror movie, and actually like turns his nose up at it. Thinks it's like,
why
this, like,
is he on this podcast? I love
it. He thinks it's like this lowbrow. It's so, hold on, let me explain it, because it's really, really brilliant. So he thinks it's like this low, it's like low art, you know, like it's like the low hanging fruit, you know, there's nothing good about horror. But Alex is the complete opposite, and he's you know, he'll die on that hill. Well, PJ experienced this thing a couple of years ago where Get Out came out, the Jordan Peele film, which is like an astounding piece of film, but it's also categorized as a horror film, and PJ felt like he was missing out because everyone in his bubble, everyone in his like social circle, was praising this film of how extraordinary it was, and he was like, he felt like he was really missing something socially and culturally important. But he because he's never watched horror movies and because he's always hated them, he was too scared to watch Get Out, so he never watched it. And so this whole podcast is, it's only 5 episodes, and the way it works is Alex decided, okay, I'm gonna train you to watch Get Out. Not just so that you won't be scared, but so that you can actually go into that movie, watch it, and enjoy it. And so he takes every episode is them talking about the horror film that Alex made PJ watch. And they start, the very first episode is The Exorcist. And then the next episode is A Nightmare on Elm Street. And the episode that follows that is Alien. And so they're watching these like heavy hitters, like, you know, big pieces of you know, big footprints in the world of horror. And they kind of break it down, and it's so fascinating. Like, someone who hates horror film should for sure listen to this podcast. Someone who loves horror films should for sure listen to this podcast. But the reason I came on to that started talking about this was because you were saying watch something that you wouldn't typically watch. If you wouldn't typically watch horror films, choose one of the films within these 5 films that Alex makes PJ watch. Watch it, and then listen to that episode. And see what that experience is like, because I think it would be really neat. I was really sad that I love horror films so much, and so like I've seen all these movies so many times over and over and over again, and I was kind of bummed that there wasn't a film in there that I hadn't seen yet, because it would have been really fun to like watch it. And anyway, listen, I've been talking a lot here. I'll give my Just the Tips, and then we can throw to this week's episode, because it's...
I thought that was your Just the Tips.
No,
right,
my...
Mr. Verbose.
My fuck! My Just the Tips is weed water. Dude, carbonated weed water. I got to PEI to see you, and as soon as I roll up, Todd's like, do you want a sparkly weed water? And I go, what? I don't know if they're selling it here in Halifax. They must be, but on PEI.
Countrywide.
Okay. So you can go to the weed store. And I don't fucking care what you think about like the provinces selling weed. Support your local dealer for sure. But
they don't have weed water.
They don't have fucking weed water. And this is like, so if you like bubbly, I love bubbly. Like the, you know, bubbly waters.
Or La Croix.
La Croix is okay. Montpellier is really good. San Pellegrino is okay. Anyway, I like bubbly waters. And so this can is like 2.5 milligrams of THC. I don't do THC too much. 2.5?
No, it doesn't usually agree with you.
It's such a perfect amount. It's in this fucking grapefruit.
Refreshing drink.
Refreshing grapefruit bubbly water. You don't even taste the weed. It's amazing. I loved it. I love it. Weed water.
How long did you notice when it kind of sunk in for you? Because like digestible, non-smokable THC is like, you know, I use oil on a regular basis, but it usually takes 1 to 2 hours before I actually start to feel it.
Well, oil usually takes me. Yeah, oil takes about 45 minutes for me. With the weed water, it's so subdued that it's like hard to tell. It's hard to tell. If I drank two of them, I might have. Maybe I'll know, but.
Important for our listeners to know that THC does not normally agree with you. So you have to be really considerate about your dosages. But this weed water gave you the experience of being... At first, you were like, I don't think it's really doing anything. But...
It I think we were joking that it numbed me. But it's not that it numbed me.
He was comfortably numb.
Yeah. Like, I was really comfortably subdued. You know? And I've been high strung. I've been really stressed out. I've been anxious. I've been depressed lately. And so it was just this like, that's what it was.
I agree. It is a nice social thing to have as well. Because like if you're not drinking for whatever reason, you can still have a special drink. And also it seems to be across the board. Everyone I know that's tried it. It's like, I just feel very, like a lot of people that I know that work with anxiety, like big, intense anxiety, this is their main sort of, this is the main way they consume.
That's nice. Turn Me On. We'll be right back after this word from our sponsors.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
All right, we're gonna throw into this episode, folks. We should have said something right off the top of it this episode to get people hype, because this is it's fucking a hype episode.
This episode went from 0 to 100
in
the first few seconds, and I think that it's the least you and I have ever spoken in an episode.
Oh, I was not verbose whatsoever.
No.
I was not bombastic.
It was, you know.
I wasn't loquacious.
No. And there's no mansplaining that happens on here, I don't think.
No, I don't think so. I'm not by me.
This is a beautiful conversation. I was so happy to stumble into, and can't wait for part two and beyond, because I really think there's some potential there for conversations. These two folks that we interviewed last week are professionals in their field. It has a lot to do with oncology and prostate cancer.
Yeah.
And but then it swings wildly and beautifully over to caring.
Yeah, this episode, you know what this episode is? This episode is about love. That's all this episode is about. It's just about like
connection,
overwhelming
and
love,
connection. I'm gonna say and connection.
Gabriella and Rob are two doctors that I met at an oncology summit in Banff, and they were big Turn Me On fans and wanted to be on the show really badly, and so it took us, you know, about a year to figure it out, but we got them on the show, and it was this. The thing that really struck me about this episode was that I, in that moment, especially that day, like, you know, because this was like about a week ago, I really needed this conversation.
I did too.
And this filled me up. So I hope that it does the same for you, because these two are very special. Very special human beings, a very special couple. I mean, I fucking wish you could see it when they were talking, but like, you're definitely going to hear it, all the little smooches they give each other the whole time. You know, any other time I'd be like disgusted by that much PDA, but with them, it's like, I don't know. It's just like the sweetest fucking thing.
It gave me some tools, I'm not going to lie. Like, yeah. It definitely gave me some tools. And, yeah. And just before we sneak over there and give you what you've been waiting for, our weekly tantalizing episode, I just want to make a really special announcement that if you haven't seen it yet in your inbox and you haven't seen it yet on your Instagram, you should know that Jeremy and I got together this weekend for the first time since March and had a really beautiful and lovely weekend, great for both of our hearts, but also great for our Patreon. And you can find us over there with a handful of new rewards in our tiers.
Merch. We got Patreon merch.
Absolutely. And so the way that plays out is if you're an existing Patreon member or you sign up now, you're eligible to be sent for your sweet and generous patronage, some of our sweet and sexy merch. And actually, one of those items of merch includes a mannequin. And I won't say anything more.
Oh, yeah.
But you can head on over and check out our Instagram stories if you haven't yet to see what those are. Or our Patreon, patreon.com/Jeremyon.
All right. This is our conversation with Gabriella and Rob. We hope you love it as much as we did. And we will see you all on the other side. Oh, we are gonna get into it. This is good. Yeah. This is great. Yeah. So, Gabriella and Rob, to start this off, we've met very briefly one time before, and it was quite a pleasure. I had the pleasure of meeting the two of you while I was speaking alongside Brian and Taylor, are the co-hosts of Sick Boy Podcast. We were speaking at a psychosocial oncology world, yeah, summit.
That's right.
And in Banff, and it was the most beautiful place.
Yeah.
And after our talk, I just remember the two of you coming up and like so excitedly engaging with me, and somehow within that, I believe it was, I don't remember who brought it up, but I believe it was Gabriella who had mentioned wanting to come on Turn Me On Podcast. Yeah. And I was like, I was taken aback, because usually Turn Me On does not usually come up when I speak at these at these medical conferences. So I was like, yeah, hell yeah, let's make this happen. And it also turns out that you guys also live here in Halifax.
Yes.
But I guess for our listeners and for Bridie too, to kind of get her caught up, why don't you let us know what it is that you do and why Turn Me On as opposed to being guests on Sick Boy?
Go for it, love.
You go for it. No, I've got a story. So you go. You introduce yourself.
I guess
first.
I should also say you guys are married as well. So this is like the cutest fucking thing.
Oh my goodness! You know, I think the heavens opened and said, "Okay, those two are doing such important work, and they really love what they're doing. Might as well put them together, so that they continue their journey beside one another." Mm. So by background, I'm a psychology professor, and I taught a lot of courses in human psychology, including sexuality, but
and
also
aging.
Health psychology.
Yep.
That has a lot to do with cancer and cancer survivorship. And right now I work as an epidemiologist at Dalhousie University, looking at how a prostate cancer diagnosis more specifically, affects and the treatments affect the quality of life of the patient, the survivor, but also the family around, the spouse, you know, people that we interact with. And finding really ways, first off, trying to gather the voice of the patient and transforming that into something tangible that empowers the patient so that they have a better quality of life. And I love what I do.
Yeah, and this the story on my side. So I'm a radiation oncologist, and you know, quite the kind of man perspective. It's all about the individual. I've been treating prostate cancer for like 25 years, and it took like a quality of life research to say, oh, these guys are really suffering afterwards. So imagine you get like your prostate out, or you get high dose radiation to your prostate, and you lose your erections overnight.
Yeah.
Right.
And
that's going to impact on you and all the other side effects. And you know, one of the guys said going from age 57 to age 75.
Imagine that when you normally would have something like 20 years to get there. And now overnight you find yourself in a young man's body, yet physically speaking, from a functional point of view, you're an old man.
Yeah.
And you need to adjust to that. And you need to start questioning, what does that mean for me?
Yeah.
Now that the life circumstances have changed, you know, can I be with a partner if I don't have a partner? Or if I have a partner, can my partner adjust?
To the lack of erectile function, for instance.
Treat me the way my life circumstances did not treat me. Because that's when the odyssey of true intimacy really starts. Where you enter that territory of unconditional love. Can you see me and can you treat me with the kindness that perhaps my life circumstances have not treated me? Can you give me that gentleness? That's what's going to help me deep into true intimacy, where I don't connect just body to body, but soul to soul, spirit to spirit, where I don't know where I start and where you begin,
right?
Or vice, or where I end and where you begin.
Deeper levels of sexuality that we'll get into, but I wanted to get, because there's got so much to talk about. So we've been telling, we've been actually teaching the guys how to have a better sexual life, even if you suffer from erectile dysfunction.
Exactly.
But before I go there, Jeremy, I want to tell you a story why I was late, you know, kind of getting onto this podcast right now, is I got called in to see a couple of guys that were putting through what they call a patient empowerment program. We're trying to help the guys adjust to going from 57 to 75, you know, losing their erections, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. And all the quality of life hits there. And thank goodness for you guys, Turn Me On podcast, right? So we want to raise the kind of openness, awareness of sexual issues within society so that this old guy doesn't have to go in and be embarrassed about me asking him this question. Like, you know, this is going to take a hit on your sexual life. We have this empowerment program, but I'm too shy even at this phase to ask that question. So I am pitching the trial, but I really dumbed down that part of it. I talk about, well, this is going to help you with connections and your relationships in your life, but I actually don't go into this like, no, this is going to be a hit psychologically. So let's start to work with this and empower you around it. So
and my love, the hit really, guys, the hit really here is one of connection, because what happens when life circumstances like a cancer diagnosis that affects our sexual function hits, what happens is we disconnect. That's when the disconnect happens. And the question is, how do I get back to that joy of living? Because my life hasn't ended. My life is continuing, and I have the potential to lead a very good, healthy, happy, I mean really truly joyful and mature and full life. But how do I do that now that I feel disconnected, now that I have all those issues that I don't know how to reconcile, I don't know how to make sense of them,
and right,
plus I don't really know who's going to want to listen to me.
Yeah, right. So okay, I guess to reel it back a little bit, something that so we're talking about male patients who come in with prostate cancer, they go through the treatment, and what I'm gathering is that it's almost, maybe not guaranteed, but correct me if I'm wrong, almost guaranteed that after going through the treatments that are required for prostate cancer, you're going to come out on the other end with the inability to become erect.
Well, so, I'll give you the data on this.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. I mean, the surgeons, when they present it, they may present a 20% risk of erectile dysfunction. The radiation oncologist, because we're treating older patients, may present a 50% chance of suffering from erectile dysfunction. But it's only if you've got good erections to start out with. And so if your erections are waning and you take an extra hit through the surgery or the radiation, then you're likely to suffer from erectile dysfunction.
What is physiologically mm-hmm. causing the, like from a surgery mm-hmm. standpoint, I'm assuming it has something to do with like the severing of certain blood vessels or nerves.
Yeah.
Right.
Nerves. Yeah.
So, and then from a radiology standpoint, it's like, it's just being zapped.
Good.
That's such a fun
analogy. But think about that,
dumbed down way to say it. Just zap.
Yeah, no, I guess. So you think of the prostate glands and the nerves that supply the penis to help with the erections go around the outside edge of the prostate gland. So when the surgeon takes out the prostate, sometimes they nick or stretch those nerves. And so that's the surgery side of it. And yes, there's a nerve sparing prostatectomy or prostate surgery sometimes available, but really the nerves are so close to the prostate, it is a real danger. In the radiation side, those nerves are also getting a high dose of radiation, and the blood vessels that supply the penis also can get narrowed, and so you get less blood flow. And if you have kind of less blood flow because you're older or you have a high blood pressure or diabetes, you know, it's just like more and more hits on the kind of physical part of our erectile function.
Yeah, and then there's the hormonal therapy, and that's when you start growing breasts and you start having hot flashes like women during menopause.
And you lose your libido as well, you lose your sex drive.
And there's some cognitive deficit there that can occur as a result of it. So all those changes coming at you at once, and because we identify so much with our body, right? So all those changes, By the time they hit in, because they violate this expectation in terms of how I should feel, what I should be able to do, they take quite a hit on the psychological well-being of those patients, men. And I'm just going to add to that, if I may. Okay, guys.
Yeah.
There are two researchers by the name of Hendrick and Hunt. And back about 10 years ago, they wrote a paper and they said that on average, it might take about 4 hours for a person who's experiencing chest pains to call a doctor, right? Call 911 and say something is going on.
Get a heart attack, yeah.
Right? But on average, listen to this. When our heart is hurting and we're hurting in a relationship and we feel disconnected, it takes on average 7 years for a person to pick up the phone, call a doctor, and say, I'm breaking here. I don't know what to do. And so take that, right, in conjunction with what's happening when you get a prostate cancer diagnosis, and you get to see what's happening now. And we've done research looking at men all throughout Atlantic Canada, and now we're actually I'm just about to submit a paper looking at men throughout Canada, and we compare them with men who never received a prostate cancer diagnosis. We even compare them with those that have any other form of cancer but not prostate, and the odds ratios are much higher for them to experience depression, to experience mental distress, and this is new
anxiety,
research and anxiety, because we knew this from small scale studies, but never before did we look at 65,000 men throughout the country to really identify what's happening. So obviously there is a problem here. It's a silent epidemic because we don't talk about it. It's hidden under the rug, and even more so because the way our society perceives those issues. Who wants to talk about sexuality and connection and what's that?
Agreed.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and
right.
So you just think the mental health hits, and then you lose the sexual connection with your partner, essentially. And that's where we're overlapping now with the terminal.
Yeah, and the other issue that speaks to all forms of cancer is that, you see, when one of our partners gets a cancer diagnosis, what ends up happening is we switch roles. I'm not your lover anymore. I'm your caretaker. Right.
Right. Yeah. Mm. And this is something that we've actually talked about quite at length at Bridie. I mean, that's also something that you know, you and I have talked about a lot through our relationship, and it's definitely one of those things that can take a huge hit on the dynamics of a relationship between partners.
And we have a solution.
I was just going to ask.
Amazing.
We have a solution. Okay. Sweethearts, research shows first. So two things. Number one, research shows that the more roles we take in our relationship prior to the cancer or relationships, the more we can switch back and forth between them. So the more I'm your lover and your friend and your playmate and the person that you want to go to a show with, right? So the less you compartmentalize with your partner, the better. Because you can go back between those roles very fast and assume them as normal rather than, you know, feeling like you're moving a mountain every time you go from one role to another. Yeah. That's number one.
Oh, interesting.
Wait,
okay,
can you break that down? Because I cannot go from one role to another.
I was just about to say that. I was like, that sounds like it would be like overwhelming for some, like this idea of switching back and forth.
So, I'm going to ask you a question just to dwell a little bit in this. What do you think gives a man an erection? Do you think that what gives a man an erection is the stimulus that is out there or what he makes in here of it, the interpretation?
Is that a question for me or for Brian?
Yeah.
I think that's a male-oriented question. Yeah, go ahead, Jeremy.
I would say a really big part of it is what's going on out there.
What you make in here.
Right, yeah.
What you make in here. So this is how you switch between roles. You take a deep breath, and then you look at your partner and say, what perfume are you wearing? Or you take a deep breath, and your hand reaches for their butt, and you squeeze, and you say, I like that. There is a picture that I've sent to Rob, and we do this in the kitchen all the time, of an old woman and an old man. They're in the kitchen. He's drying dishes, and her hand at 85 is on his butt, squeezing. That's how you do it. You take a breath, and you say, those lips. Show me. Breathe. I'm here.
God, I wish podcasting was more of a visual medium.
Because this is too gold.
God.
I just have to say, this is like full disclosure. Like, we're just going to be ourselves, and we're just going to tell the truth.
Yeah, you're going to take a breath, and you're going to say, you hold on to your shirt, and you say, bud, speak to me in ways I can accept understand.
Wait. The kitchen. Go ahead, Freddie.
Where are you, Professor? I'm coming.
Online course for this one, right?
Yeah.
The kitchen is designed so that the kind of
my waitlist just jumped to 1,000.
The island and the rest is very, very tight. And so this is a good one, Freddie. So I feel like I'm kind of like molesting my wife, like kind of all day long. As she's kind of making the oatmeal, I'm like grabbing her bum and stuff like that. The difference is that she's molesting me back. And not only that, she's receptive. This is super important. This is like a super serious point. When I do that, she goes, oh, that feels good. Like she is receptive and kind
of... It's a muscle.
Encourages me to kind of... I feel like a pervert like most of the time, but she's slowly desensitizing
completely
me.
Completely desensitized. It's like a muscle. So. Guys, think about it like a muscle. The more you practice it, the more you get good at it. And it takes some time to develop a habit. But the more you do it, the more that muscle, that neurocircuitry happens in the brain.
Yeah.
So I know that irrespective, so I could be having a really, and I'm serious now, I could be having something really going on at work that requires my attention. I'm on fight or flight mode, you know, professional, and I really need to deal with it, right? There's a deadline or there's a timeline. I have to submit a grant. And yet, it's very easy. If he happens to be in my proximity... And he slowed down enough to suggest to me that his cues are so important that he's a little bit available. Should I see him? Because I have times when I say, don't talk to me.
Yeah. Not very often, but don't talk.
Right? So all I have to do is just stop. Really, speed changes right away. And we just stay there. And again, it's nice to just stay there. Don't just go for the kiss right away. Just stay there for a breathe.
Remember, I just go for the kiss myself. But anyways,
and slow way, way down. One advice I have for anybody that wants to enjoy a sexual experience, and I'm not just talking about penetration. I'm talking about you and I are making one. You and I are, healing happens when your partner breathes you in and gives you that which your life circumstances or those, whoever, whatever hit you, doesn't give you. That means kindness. Mm. That means love. Mm. That means acceptance. That means you're mine.
Mm.
And you do that with words, and you do that with slowing down and with breath. Breath is so quintessential. It gives life.
Mm-hmm.
And kissing is about breath.
Mm.
I like
and
that.
Breath sometimes. Yeah. And sometimes it's a touch that is slowed down, slowing way, way, way down.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
And I haven't gone through number two yet.
Yeah.
Okay, but
saying.
Okay. Can we go for it, Bridie?
Okay,
well, I don't know. I'm just like, I feel like I'm in an ocean right now.
Keep swimming. The island is close.
When you said you have a solution.
You guys want to come for dinner?
Part two, parts 1 to 5 of Turn Me On podcast. I expected you to say something like the solution to people with penises losing their prostate and losing a feeling of like being a sexual being and all of their relationships changing would be. So I wrote down what I thought the solution would be. So I don't know where this other answer came from, but would be normalizing other types of intimacy from before getting ill, and beyond. And so I love like how intimate. I guess that is the same answer because that seems like a very intimate dance that you have and that you.
Yeah.
Can sense in each other. What would you say though to somebody who is really like what you know people who have experienced sexual trauma and are like don't actually touch me without asking in relationships.
Right.
Not to steer it over there, but that's like you know or any other block. It doesn't even have to be a sexual trauma, but just any block.
Agreed.
To being open to that kind of intimacy.
Agreed.
I have, so now this is my second answer.
Okay,
so your
great.
Question actually leads me to my second answer. There is something called the Imago Theory. And the Imago Theory teaches you how to dialogue with your partner in a way in which you come to know yourself. Now remember, the only way we would ever come to know ourselves is in relationship with another. So what does that mean? I love you, Bradley. This is such a great question.
Bradley,
because it means I need to now stop watching my movie and really through the process of mindfulness, come in the present moment and make myself completely available to me. So when you say, when we're close to being intimate, but you've had sexual trauma and stuff has happened there, you've been violated. And I can sense that something has happened. I'm going to ask you to talk about it if you feel comfortable and if you want to be with me and make one, chances are you're going to say something. Mm. I'm going to say in return, let me see if I get this right and approach you with, I don't know mind. No, I don't know what it means to be you. I don't know what it means to breathe the air the way you do. I'm going to seek you like a blind man until I find you. And I'm going to ask, is this what you meant? I can sense such and such. Is this makes sense? This is why it makes sense. Is there anything more about that? And when I do that, two things happen, especially if I hold your hand. There is oxytocin. That's the cuddle hormone. It's a healing hormone. And the more I do that, the more endorphins are invading your body. That's what we feel when we fall in love with another person. Endorphins are everywhere. Just we're chemically drunk. Because what I'm telling you, your old brain, your primitive brain is saying, I'm going to live, I'm not going to die. She wants to know me, not to judge me. She wants to know me, to love me.
Mm.
And when I do that, when I stop my chattering mind and I'm fully available to you, I'm fully available to me. That gift I give you, it's my gift to me. That's when connection happened. On that pasture of non-right doing or wrongdoing, like Rumi says.
Mm.
There's no judgment. There is, I don't know what it means to be you. I don't know what it means to have your life experiences. I don't know what it means to have your struggles. Teach me, show me. Let me love you. Let me become your beloved. Be my beloved.
Can I also just answer it? You know, in some ways we can present this as very easy, but there's actually work to be done here. Mm. And when we do that self-work, when we do that self-reflection, you know, the self-compassion piece, when we set our intentions, when we decide that we're going to invest in the relationship through an emotional intimacy, the sexual part of the relationship can become deeper, deeper, deeper. And I don't want to minimize this as well. You know, people suffer from, you know, abuse or erectile dysfunction after prostate surgery, and it's tough, and it takes time to grieve those losses and so on. But the point is, we're pointing towards relationship that has a deep connection and oftentimes manifests then through a much healthier, happier sexuality.
Yeah, and there's neuroscience, and there's science to back this up. So those answers are not, you know, just some euphoria from a woman who loves literature and loves Rumi and Shakespeare as much. I'm a scientist at base. So you're talking to someone that, you know, I taught over 86 courses in psychology at University of Toronto. So that's a lot of courses, and over 25,000 people. It's a lot of interaction with actual, you know, young people who go through a lot of those issues. So a lot of review of the literature and seeing what science is. And we have, you know, people, amazing scientists like, you know, Hendrick and Hunt in 1980, they came up with this imago theory that actually teaches you the ABCs of how to dialogue, how to connect. Dialogue, communication is about connection, because that's what's being lost in translation. At first, we fall in love, everything is nice and hanky-dory, and we are drunk on chemicals. Mm. But how do we sustain that? Through normal living, through when... life hits us.
Or when something awful happens.
or something awful happens, like a cancer diagnosis where, you know, COVID comes in and it threatens all sorts of aspects of our living. How do we navigate all this? What are some ways in which we can do this? And there's lots of science to back this up. Science that backs things up at the level of living, but also at the level that allows you to really spiritually grow, mature, come into a self that you accept totally, you know? And a level of maturity that really allows you to be happy dans sa peau, happy in your skin, no matter what happens.
What do you find about in your research? Like, self work is so like ambiguous, and it's like one of those things where you can never, like, the work is never finished. Mm-hmm. It feels like. Do you encounter anything notable between, like, people who I mean, I imagine the people who are showing up to get research are people who are curious about the work. So what makes that, like, what's that trait in a person? You know, is it necessity? The dry...
I'm not sure I understand the question. What do you mean by work?
I mean the self, like, so... Let's say it takes 7 years for someone to reach out.
Oh, I see what you mean.
And get that and get that help or acknowledge that they need it. Yeah. And it's like, you know, if it was maybe something in the body, something very physical, we respond to it right away.
Yeah. It's very simple. The research, again, there was research that was published about 10 years ago for the first time really in the field of mental health and relationships about wonderment, you know, wondering about approaching things with a don't know mind. You know, we think that our self-worth, the most important thing about us is what we know, but that's arrogance really. It's the don't know. Don't know where the divine lives, where the mystery lives, where the connection lives, where I come to realize that we're so much more alike than different. Differences are only of the body. But once you get past that, and you do that through communication, once you get past that, you realize just how much more alike than different we are. That breath, that idea of a beloved lies in that. When I drop all my identifications and approach you with, don't know, teach me, show me. Mm. And then be grateful, right? And realize that everybody that we have actually an encounter with You know, I would see, I say to myself from a spiritual document called A Course in Miracles. I love that. I came upon this quote in the book, and I'm just in love with it. It says, I will see you as my friend so that I may remember you are part of me and come to know myself. Mm. I mean, how beautiful is that? Mm. You show me who I am. Mm. You teach me who I am. At the end of this interview, when it's all nice and quiet and we're not talking anymore, I will be reflecting on that and say, what did I learn? What did that breath that you taking, this is breath, you're spending breath with me. That's precious.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I'm kind of dying to know is that, like, so through our discourse of trying to set this up where we could all sit down and have a chat, Rob, you had mentioned that you two were giving a quote, great sex after cancer workshop at a national conference.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been to a number of like hospice conferences and you know, like national medical conferences on behalf of my speaking career and on behalf of Sick Boy. And I'm always curious because Turn Me On is a huge part of my life. And it's also something that I try to keep separate from those like that side of my work, because I feel like there's sometimes sex is something that we struggle mm-hmm. to talk about, you know, I feel like sometimes in those scenarios and those situations, like it's still pretty taboo, but I mean, the two of you are going to these national conferences talking about sex and cancer and how to have great sex after cancer. How are those workshops received at national conferences like that? Is it pretty welcome, or do you tend to get any pushback on that sort of thing? Or is it just completely different because it's coming from like a scientific background or a scientific mm-hmm. perspective?
Yeah, you know, one of the reasons I think your podcast is great is that it actually pertains to all of us. And we've been socialized to say, well, let's not talk about sexuality. But Gabrielle has taught me an awful lot. And we're sexual beings, really, you know, from the time we're born to the time we die. And so people are very curious. And often what we want to do is make those teachings about how do we facilitate better sexual connection in people who had a cancer diagnosis. We try to make those teachings pertinent to each and every person. And so, you know, when we go to a psychosocial oncology conference, people want to be able to learn about how they can do that. And so it's extremely welcome. And just last thing I wanted to say is we use that title, Great Sex After Cancer, because it was, we were working with Testicular Cancer Canada, and we said, can we partner with you? And the CEO, Alex Desai, had said, these young guys get a testicular cancer diagnosis, often go through self-image issues, they go through depression, anxiety, which inhibits their ability to actually have good sex. So even though physically they could do that, they're suffering psychologically. Mm. And his organization is pretty kind of edgy, and so we came up with that title, Great Sex After Cancer. And I just want to put that within the context of sometimes you're not going to have great kind of penetrative sex after cancer because it's just not going to work out, or you're dying of cancer, et cetera, et cetera. But the same principles apply. So what we're trying to do is, in my mind, we're talking about intimacy and connection as a kind of precursor, but it's like, you know, it's not like it's like a black or white thing. It says, as you increase your intimacy, your emotional connection, your kind of that love at heart to heart, then the sexual experiences often get, you know, much better, and that there are different things we can do to kind of facilitate the sexual connection.
And we talk about penetrative sex, we talk about non-penetrative sex, but most importantly, we talk about, and I think this is one point of curiosity for all audiences that we had up to now, and you included actually, is how do you get back to that joy of intimacy? again. Because people oftentimes they say we have sex. I mean, we have penetrative sex, or, you know, we touch, but the connection is not there. And so that's when we bring in the importance of things like communication and knowing how to communicate, and the imago theory that Dr. Hendrick and Hunt developed in 1980s. It's a great precursor to that if you want to dwell in that, because they developed a very simple recipe, and things should be simple. If they're not simple, something is not quite right. You know, it should be simple.
So communication is one thing.
Communication is one thing. Mm-hmm. But part of that is the idea of, you know, there are three components here. There's otherness, there is theirness, and there is oneness, right? No, we don't like otherness. The bottom line is, when we are intimate with one another, I don't want to breathe into another. I want to breathe into one. I want to breathe into theirness. And so communication strategies like the imago process bring us there. There is no difference between us. I mean, there is no difference at that level, at that psychological, that soul, spirit level, if you may. So a process like that brings us from otherness, which is very darn uncomfortable, to theirness. And that can even go one step further into oneness at the level of mind. The more you practice that, because it's a technique, the more you practice, the better you get at it. And that's when life becomes an odyssey. That's when intimacy, every opportunity you have, because you become appreciative. You start seeing value and what counts in all around you, in all your interaction. Mm. You start seeing your partner so much more different, because you feel seen, validated, heard. There is such connection between you now that you can be in a room full with strangers. When I'm in a room full with strangers, I feel the heartbeat of my beloved. We're never disconnected.
Yeah. Mm. That's so sweet. It's really interesting, because, like, and Bridie, I'm curious if you feel this way, but like hearing all of this, it's really reminiscent of the times that we've had conversations with, like, I'm thinking specifically like with Eva Clay, when we were talking about tantric, like the tantric practice in sex and intimacy. Yeah. This is very similar in terms of the language that's being used, and the sort of like philosophy behind it all.
Yeah.
Does that work? Like, does that have anything? Are you
absolutely.
Guys familiar with talking?
I mean, guys, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, guys, what do you think the Kami Sutra is about? You know, I laugh at my students.
Just define it so people who don't know about
Kami Sutra. It's a East Asian document that describes various sexual positions and so on. But the entire book is predicated on how to connect at the soul level. The sexual positions and the actual sexual unification is just a stepping stone to making one, to, again, moving from otherness, separateness, to theirness, to oneness. That's what it is about. That's what the Kami Sutra was about all along.
Right.
It was never about how many sexual positions are there. What's the diversity? And, you know.
Right.
I'm actually super glad that we're touching this topic, because we're almost like, I feel like this is almost like a smorgasbord of ideas. I'm almost like an ocean of ideas, potentially. And I did want to make sure that we kind of touch this issue. It's like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Like, you have to feel safe first. You have to feel fed first. You have to, you know, have the kind of first step positive relationship. But as those needs are fulfilled, as there's kind of a safe feeling, as there's an emotional connection, and especially at time of orgasm, there's an incredible bonding that can happen that, kind of transcends the kind of physical sexual act into something of merging of a kind of a spiritual level. And I just want to mention that what we're trying to do is facilitate those kind of higher levels. And it's not to say that everyone's going to have that every time. It's just that it's possible through this is a spiritual development. This is a psychological development. As you work on those things, then you can experience the kind of higher levels of sexuality.
And, you know, there are people now that would pay $3,000 to go to India to meet a guru that is going to teach them how to go inwards and listening to themselves. And that's great. It's all fine and dandy, but really you're not going to get to connection, to spirit, to oneness, to all there is through that. You're going to do it through another human being.
It's more likely through
when
relationship.
When you relate, when you're able to shut down your chattering mind, the monkey mind, you know, and be fully present, that's the connection with the divine. That's the oneness. That's the process where you go from separateness to theirness to oneness. Right. Bingo, done.
It's really fascinating to hear the two of you talk about this sort of stuff, because it's like I mean maybe I'm ignorant to it, but it feels as though the topic or the idea of like spirituality and like energetic connection doesn't typically fit within the realm of like science and research. You know, like is there what kind of work is being done in from a scientific perspective to like dig into this kind of what seems like pretty ethereal, you know,
actually a lot of points of view being done. Yeah. A lot of work is being done. It's just that, you know, scientists like to stay away from quackery, you know?
Right. Yeah, totally.
We like to stay away from quackery. At the same time, we investigate things like, for example, just to give you an example, the Imago theory. It's those two scientists have done an incredible amount of work. Their whole life has been about, you know, helping couples connect. You know, healing this disconnect, talking about healing at its essence. You know, and how do we get there? How do we get people to go into their frontal lobe, again, neuroscience, to feel that they're loved, they're visible, they're accepted, and somebody wants to know them, where they can integrate things. And they're no longer living in cognitive dissonance, which we've known has contributed to sickness. Well, you can't heal and, you know, think one thing, do another, and live in that kind of, you know, tension, that pull. So we need to unite the two. So in fact, there's a lot of science talking about what you would call spiritual principles. Right? But here's the thing, you know, and Rob and I were just talking about this morning over breakfast, how, you know, even an idea, even a theory like the Imago theory, you know, you go out there and you talk to some psychiatrists or psychotherapists, and they haven't really done their work. That they just scratched the surface quickly. They got the techniques to help couples, but they haven't then themselves reflected and continue to educate themselves and updated themselves on the continuous research that is done on this field. For example, we've done a huge amount of work in neuropsychology, looking at how wonderment brings you into the frontal lobe, how with endorphins and oxytocin being released at the same time, so wonderment is really just like exercise, a good diet, you know, good relationships in your life, eliminating toxic relationships, being wonderment, wondering, starting with a don't know mind. Yeah. I mean, this is huge. Is it spiritual? Sure it is. Is it quackery? No, I wouldn't say it is, because we have done a lot of science and neuropsychology to show, you know, neural connections in the brain and how that happens at the psychological level, at the brain level.
Can I also jump in as well? I think we only have about 10 more podcasts to do with you. We'll do couples counseling.
And we can put the microphones on. We'll just talk over.
Yeah. So we four are a product of Western culture. We think about things from a very material perspective.
Yes.
But it actually, you know, even Einstein was pointing to something that was bigger than that, right? Mm-hmm. So there was a time-space continuum. If you polled all your listeners and said, have you had an experience that you can't explain from a material point of view? Like somebody passes and you kind of see them that night. You know, there's ESP. There's so many things that we experience that Western science cannot explain. And what I'm trying to do is get you back into the sexuality piece of this. We, and that the science shows, and this is like 30 years good science, the science shows that our heart actually has a brain of its own. It has a kind of energetic communication, and our heart does connect with other human beings. And I'm just going to tell you this super brief experiment. Yeah. I mean, this is science now, but we don't believe it because it just doesn't put into our paradigm yet. Sure. So they hook somebody up. They have their brain waves all, you know, like EEGs. They have all the heart monitors on, and a computer program randomly brings up a picture that's very positive and loving or really grotesque and awful. And the person doesn't know beforehand. And then they watch the response by the monitoring within the heart and within the brain. And as that picture comes up, actually the heart responds more quickly than the frontal lobe by about, I know, 3/10 of a second. The heart is picking up, oh, that's awful, prior to the brain actually picking it up. This is even more wild. This is like, you know, recreational drugs or whatever. Even before the computer randomizes between an awful picture and a positive picture, the heart actually responds according to the type of the picture. So it bypasses a space-time phenomenon. It's precognition, right? So the point is, the reality is that there's something beyond this physical world. Call it consciousness, call it something, but it's something that transcends this. And I think it is an overlap with the sexual picture, because when there is that kind of heart-to-heart connection with that other human being, and it's done in the kind of loving way, then the sexuality piece can connect that heart even further.
Yeah.
Fuck so, yeah. I love that. That is, yeah, that's, I mean, and what I love about that is, like, I can't speak for everyone, but man, I feel like a lot of people can hear that and go, yeah, I feel like I've felt that before. Like, I feel like I've been in that moment where
it's so hard
to describe. It's so intangible, but it's like it's this deep seated knowing of like, I know what that is, but I know what that is.
Right. You know, you've experienced it. That is the point. So at soul level, you're tapping into an information that you couldn't get from the kind of scientific Western paradigm, the current paradigm. Right. Yeah. But our soul level is also talking with the other soul level.
Yeah.
Right, there's connection there, right?
And I'm going to give you an image. Exactly. Yeah. That's just to continue on that. Mm-hmm. When Rob stops his chattering mind.
And I got a pretty chattering mind. Yeah.
And I see that as a blank slate.
Just shut up, Rutledge.
Yeah. Just like a lake, a still lake. I see myself, I see my most cherished beingness reflected into this lake that now he allows me to see myself. That's like, and when he reflects to me, is that what you're saying? It makes sense. That is there anything else? And we talk back and forth. That, do you see that unification? I mean, that's divine. Yeah. That's connect. That's what we're yearning for. We are yearning. We are yearning for that connection, that oneness.
Right. Do you guys offer couples counseling? It's so wild to like see the two of you, like interact in this way where I'm going. They're like, you guys would make a killing. Like, it's
part of your mirror neurons, right?
So yes, I mean,
Gabrielle has just taught me so much. I've been like on a crash course of learning, and I've got a lot to learn. I would start it off early, but this is a mirror neurons phenomenon, right? So you see us being very loving and caring and kind of kissy together, and it actually sets that kind of cascade of chemicals within your brain as well.
Yeah. Totally. What's really funny is that sometimes I have this feeling where I'm like, when I see other people expressing PDA, public displays of affection, I'm like, ugh. It's like, there's like a disconnect where I go, this is weird for me. But like, in seeing it with the two of you, like, it's so infectious. Like, I'm about to go grab Bigby and just like give him,
Bigby's
my dog. Yeah, he's my dog.
And then breathe.
I just want to look into his eyes and just give him a little kiss on the face. And it's like it's
let
infectious.
Let him lick your lips. Yeah,
totally. Brad, you're going to chime
he's
in
coming.
There.
I want to know how you arrived at this place that you express yourself from. Like, you know, in early relationships, was mindfulness already a thing for you? Was it kind of something that for both of you, or is this? Yeah, you said you're each other's teacher and all of that.
Yeah,
just wondering, like, how did this happen? Yeah, how did this happen?
We both had screwed up relationships.
You got to be through a few bad ones, good ones.
It just didn't happen like that. We didn't just wake up and, you know, there's a core belief that relationships are just supposed to work. This stuff is, no, that's bullshit. No, because there's so much, you know, we all learn how to be and what's expected of us. And we follow those roles and those expectations until we hit the wall and we say, you know what, I'm done. There has to be another way to look at this. There has to be, I refuse to be the puppet. Yeah. Every time you press this button, there is Gabriella. Press this button. Can I be the puppet here? Can I be the mind observing this and acting differently from a mature place? How do I grow? How do I take responsibility for what is happening here?
And just to say, Gabriella is really fantastic at that. So for instance, one of the things is, so when I arrive home from work or she arrives home from work, I would call it a ritual, but that just sounds so dry. Mm-hmm. We have a way of being such that as soon as we kind of see each other, it's that first kind of kiss and hug, and we spend the time. And so no matter how crappy my day was,
or how busy we are, whatever we're doing in that moment,
yeah,
you drop it. I drop it and I run to him. And I'm as if I haven't seen him in ages.
Right.
And every morning we go to sleep closing down that day. So when I wake up and I put that foot on the floor that morning, that's my day. That's my day. I'm going to have one more day with him. These are the best of times, and every day is the best of time. And it doesn't matter what's happening, because stuff is always going to, shit will always happen. Right. That's a guarantee.
But we're still going to cuddle going to bed. We're still going to cuddle going
when
up.
We go off, yes.
And just to answer this off for you, Brian, I just want to just say this quick thing. So it's back to self-work. So every morning I meditate and I'm praying to be a better person, and I'm setting my intention to be loving and caring to every single person I meet. So I keep working on myself, keep working at myself, and that I'm hoping kind of washes over into our relationship as well.
Yeah, and every time I go to bed, I don't carry stuff from the previous day. I address things. I don't let things, you know,
let go of grievances.
Yeah. Yes, but and I address them. We are transparent to each other. We've learned how to communicate in a way that we don't cut each other down. We acknowledge each other's pain. We acknowledge what is, but also knowing when we have that kind of communication, when he's my mirror, he's my leg, he's my blind slate, when I see myself. When we arrive at that place of, we have made a commitment at some level or another. We have said, you are my beloved.
Soulmates.
And so it's an odyssey. Life now, it's an odyssey. Life now is a joy. Every day we wake up, we wonder, what's going to be today? And how can I find, you become drunk on that connection. On that, the moment you find that recipe. You know, you want to be
or
in
you
there.
Think, or you think yourself, oh my God, I'm living with this guy. He's such a mess. I'm teasing.
My favorite thing is when we slow down and we breathe and it's like slow motion kiss. Slow motion, lips looking at each other.
Can you recognize that she's a kissaholic?
I'm a kissaholic. Can I tell you what we did? Guys, can I tell you what we did?
Yeah, did it happen in New Zealand?
I saw that
in the email.
So for everybody listening in, Gabriella, hi, my name's Gabriella. I'm a kissaholic. Welcome, Gabriella. So I don't know how the start, but she said, I want to be like kissed for like half an hour. And so we actually, I think, did that in Bermuda first. And then in New Zealand, she upped it to an hour. And
In Australia, I amped it to an hour.
Okay.
And in New Zealand, I amped it to 2 hours.
Right. But I only delivered like an hour 15.
Yeah.
So I under-delivered.
So it's just a make-out session, kind of?
No.
It's a smooch.
Yeah, but you have to keep the lips in contact all the time. It's not like just like, you know, all this type of stuff. It's like...
And you got to take a picture before and after. You have to do this experiment.
Oh, my God. I'm so down.
Promise me, you guys, half an hour. When you go to PI, half an hour smooching nonstop. Picture after you send it to us.
It's actually...
Did you just end up with that, like, sort of Kool-Aid stain look?
No, but it was beautiful.
Yeah.
Your soul was bathed. And oh, my God, you got to try it. You have to try it.
Because it actually does change the energy.
It changes the neurochemistry.
So when we come back for podcast number 10 with you guys, we want to find out what your experience was.
I
want to
see the pictures, because we can show you ours, too, if you want.
Oh, my gosh. I got to say, this is with the moment that, I mean, it's kind of coming full circle here as we wrap up. But the moment that we connected in Banff after that talk, and I got to spend like 3 minutes just chatting with the two of you. I was really excited for the time to sit down and to have a conversation with the two of you. And honestly, I had no idea like where it was going to go. I didn't even know like what we were going to talk about. Even before we started recording, Bridie Bridie and I were on the phone, and Bridie was like, "So what are we talking?" And I was like, "I have no fucking clue. I don't know. But all I know is that there's gonna be a vibe chemistry. And there's gonna be a chemistry here. And I have to say, like, from a very personal standpoint, I needed this conversation so badly today.
Thank you. Yeah.
And so I want to say from like the bottom of my heart, thank you so much to the two of you for taking the time and the space to share what you've shared. And not only to share the knowledge that you have, but to just share all of that, all whilst sharing your own relationship through this screen with us. Because really, like, I feel filled up. I feel filled up from your guys' love. And that's
thank you.
That's something that I really just, I can't thank you enough. So thank you for that.
Thank you. And before Bridie kind of says goodbye or whatever, I just want to say that there's a little teaching point there. And that is, you know, you're like, oh, maybe we're probably going to have sexual intercourse. You know, maybe within the next, I'm not saying right now, but in a relationship, the two of the guys may think, okay, tonight's the night. Things are lining up exactly right. We kind of know that we're going to have sexual intercourse. But why not go into it with the mind of, I don't know what's going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. And so in the same way we came into this interview, being open to whatever's going to happen. So that's a quick little sexual suggestion.
And if you want, next time you're both in the room, we're both in the room, we'll do a one-on-one teaching on how to actually do that communication piece. That will also be wonderful. And we're open to that.
100%.
I'm so in. Yeah.
Well, thank you guys. Thank you so much. Brady, go ahead. Sorry, I cut you off there.
I think I may be on a little delay this whole time, but or my mind is just like chugging along trying to like absorb everything in this ocean. So, but next time for sure. And thank you for all the same things Jeremy said. Just
thank you.
It's just really, I feel you guys.
Thank you. So sweet. We'll chat later, guys. Take care. Okay.
Thank you, guys.
Bless you.
Love you.
Well, there you have it, folks. That was our conversation with Gabriella and Rob. I hope you enjoyed it, because I sure did. And are you still recording, Bridie?
Oh, yes.
Okay, good. fuck, man. Aren't they just like, they're just a whirlwind of love.
What I would give to be able to just have a video component solely to be able to see. They were really insistent on sharing a set of headphones and sitting next to each other, even though it doesn't always lead to the best audio. But I'm so glad.
Right.
I'm so glad they did.
They shared AirBuds. They each had an AirBud. Hey, we should break their kiss record. You want to try to kiss for like 7 hours?
Oh my God. They kissed for what? What, 51 minutes?
Yeah, it's almost an hour. Yeah. I wonder what the world record is for that. It's probably something so fucking gross, like 7 weeks.
Ew. No, brush your teeth?
No, man. You can't brush your teeth. The world's longest kiss. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Akachai Taranarat.
I'm sure.
I think is the name of the person, maybe? Longest kiss, and it wouldn't have been Valentine's Day without a big old smooch. The longest kiss lasted, ready for this? 58 hours. 35 minutes and 58 seconds. Achieved by Ekachai Tyranat.
What
do
they
Laksana
Tinaranat. Take their heads together? Did they sleep?
No.
They
no,
didn't eat or drink water?
No, none of that shit. No. You can't separate your lips. That's not impossible.
For 58 hours. You can't not drink water for 58 hours.
What? Yes, you can.
You can only live like 2 days without water.
Oh, shut the fuck up. You're drinking the person's spit. You're drinking it's lover's spit. That's the water.
Oh, all right. Fine. Oh,
God. This is so hot. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode.
Tell us what you want to hear more of, because I have a feeling there's lots of little tidbits in there that you may be like, hey, can we zero in on that thing?
Yeah, because we want to have them on. We want to have them on again, so we'll have them on again and narrow it in. Hey, did you know the most hugs given in 24 hours by an individual? The most hugs given in 24 hours is 8,709. 24 hours. That's so many hugs.
It's not recent.
No, no, not COVID friendly.
You know, in discovering my life's purpose, maybe it should just be making the Guinness Book of World Records for something.
Yeah, we could do it. Me and you could do it. 60 hour kiss. Here we go. All right, folks, that is it for this week.
Absolutely. Until next week,
go fuck yourself.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.